This is a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Especially, particularly to our internet listeners that are here right now. And I'll ask you this time for our secretary to call the roll.
Cronin.
Present.
Kurd.
Here.
Feikert.
Here.
Freiriks. Lederman. Lederman.
Here.
Olson.
Here.
Romka.
Here.
Romka. You're here. Rounds.
Here.
Solberg.
Here.
Vanderlinde.
Here.
Roush.
Yep.
Kirkaby.
Here.
Quorum present.
We actually have a couple bills to go to work with this morning, but prior to that, we actually did have a little meeting last week, and I would ask somebody to submit. Thank you, Representative Rounds, second by Representative Roush. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Motion carried. This morning, if I could ask our two pages to come up here and get your schmooze in time right now. Come up and say good morning to us and please identify yourself.
Good morning. My name is Larissa Buckles. I'm from Tripp.
Good morning. I'm Cortland Hagman and I'm from Brookings.
Thank you. Good morning and thank you for all that you do for us. I believe that we're sitting pretty good right now with the two bills that we do have. I'm quite certain that both proponents and any opponents have signed in. With that, we will begin with House Bill 1019, an act to revise certain provisions and procedures regarding elections. I do believe that we have Secretary Nelson.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Chris Nelson, Secretary of State. I bring to you House Bill 1019. This bill has gone through the State Board of Elections and has received their unanimous endorsement, and from there we bring this to you. As I work with the election statutes over the course of an election cycle, we find those things that we identify as cleanups that are necessary in the statutes, and I can tell you that everything that's included in this bill would be in that category. Some cleanup items covering the broad spectrum of election law. And I'm going to go through this very quickly, section by section, because it touches a lot of different items. Section number one deals with a certification that a sheriff candidate has to file. We're changing the deadline so that the deadline for filing that certification lines up with the deadlines for filing nominating petitions. Right now they're off by a week or two, and this puts them in the same time frame. So that everything is filed when it needs to be. Section 2 deals with ballots for presidential primaries, and the language that's being overstruck talks about check marks and X's and circles and squares. We don't use that anymore because we use our optical scan ballots where we fill in the oval, so we're clarifying that. Section 3 deals with a provision of the state law that says if a political party wants to invite independent voters to vote in their primary, and we've got a provision that says a party can do that if they want to. Thus far, the only party that's done that is the Libertarian Party. The Democratic Party was talking about doing that this last time around, and that's fine, but what made me really nervous is the Democratic Party was talking about making that decision to include independents in their primary on the last weekend of March, literally 3 weeks before absentee voting would begin, and that would have been very difficult for us to reprogram all of the things dealing with voter registration lists and the election night reporting system and all of those kinds of things to accommodate that. And so what we're simply saying in Section 3 is, political party, if you want to make that decision, that's fine, but please do it by the end of the year prior to the election year so Secretary of State and county auditors can reprogram the equipment that needs to be to accommodate that without having any difficulties. Section 4 deals with a public notice, and this would come into play usually at the county level if a county official had resigned maybe in the middle of their term And that position then would be opened up on the ballot for the remaining 2 years. Right now, there's a window of about 2 months where if that vacancy occurs, there's literally no requirement for a public notice that this position is open to be elected on, and so nobody knows that they can actually run for the last 2 years of that appointment. And so what we're saying is it is appropriate that there be a public notice saying, here's a two-year opening if you want to run for that office. Section 5 deals with our statute, our no campaigning at the polling place statute. And there are three things that are being dealt with in this statute. And I want to point out each of these individually because they are different. On page 3, lines 14 and 15, we are adding some new language that would prohibit, already we prohibit campaigning at the polling place for a ballot question that might be on that particular ballot. But we're adding some words to prohibit campaigning for a ballot question which may be submitted. And here's the scenario. On a primary election ballot, we don't have typically statewide ballot questions. And so under our current law, it would be conceivable that somebody who is campaigning for or against a statewide ballot question that's going to be on the general election ballot in November, they could stand right at the doorway of the polling place for the primary election and hand out their campaign literature. And we just don't think that's appropriate, and it causes confusion at the polling place, and it begins to be difficult. How do we sort out which measure they're actually campaigning on? And so we're simply saying we're not going to allow that at the polling place. The second change on lines 16 and 17 would prohibit petition signature gathering at the polling place. Right now, it is permissible for folks to stand right in the entry of the polling place and collect petition signatures. And I will tell you, at this point, we've not had a problem with it, but we could see it getting to be a problem. And so what we're saying is within that 100-foot area outside of the polling place, we don't think it's appropriate to collect petition signatures. If you want to go 100 feet away from the entry of the polling place and collect the signatures, that's fine. But right at the door, especially if three or four different groups decide we're all going to start collecting signatures at the polling place, then you start to have bottlenecks and issues, and we just want to keep that access to the polling place as free as we can. Last half of line 17, you notice we're overstriking some existing language that prohibits exit polling at the polling place. The reason we're overstriking this is not by our choice. We were sued in federal court last spring by all of the national media who run exit polls, and their allegation was that our prohibition right here is unconstitutional, and unfortunately they were right, and we lost that federal suit and agreed not to enforce this particular provision. And so for clarity's sake, we think it ought to simply come out of the statute. Section 6. Right now, you're familiar at a polling place when you come and you check in to vote. They cross you off the registration list and they write your name in a poll book. Several counties have approached us and said, can we use an electronic poll book, a laptop computer, instead of writing the name on that? And with proper safeguards, I certainly don't have any problem with that, but our statute doesn't allow for it. And so we're opening it up to give counties that option of using a laptop computer as the poll book. Now, bear in mind, there still is the safeguard of the registration list that will be in paper format, and so folks will be checked off on that. And so if for some terrible reason that laptop would crash, we can go back to the paper registration list that is right there, and we will know who has and has not showed up to vote. Section 7 and Section 9 are clarifications as to when a person who's elected to municipal office, particularly in the trustee form of government, will take office. Section 8 deals with a decision municipalities can make as to when they're going to hold their municipal election. By default, it's the second Tuesday in April. If they choose to use a different date, this simply says you need to make that decision by mid-January. We've had a couple situations where municipalities have made that decision very late in the process, and citizens have come to us and said, wait a minute, this isn't fair. We didn't know that this change was coming, and we're simply saying, if you're going to make the change, do it in advance so the citizens know when the election is going to be and nobody's taken by surprise. Section 10 deals with those times when a municipality may put a ballot question on the general election ballot. Both Watertown and Vermilion did that this last time. Works well, but we're saying if you're going to put that on the general election ballot, the deadline for getting that information to the county auditor is going to be the second Tuesday in August, which is the deadline for all candidates to be in and done. But we're asking that in some cases, the auditor may have some flexibility in allowing that information to come in a week or two later. We're going to give the auditor that flexibility to allow the information to come in later if they can do it and still get their ballots prepared on time. And we think that'll work very well. And in Section 11, we're simply standardizing some language so far as how petitions can arrive for school board elections if they come in after the deadline. And this standardizes it so it's the same way for schools as it is for every other type of candidate that's filing a nominating petition. Mr. Chairman, I know I've covered a lot of different areas, but I felt I needed to touch on each of those. We'll be happy to answer questions when appropriate. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. Are there additional proponents to House Bill 1019? Additional proponents to 1019. Are there questions at this time? Secretary Nelson. Are there opponents to House Bill 1019? Opponents to House Bill 1019. With that, I'm comfortable that Secretary Nelson will waive any rebuttal that might come up. Questions of this committee for Secretary Nelson regarding House Bill 1019? No questions. Will this committee entertain a motion or some action on House Bill 1019? Representative Rounds.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move due pass on House Bill 1019.
Thank you. A motion is a second by Representative Curd. Discussions.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Rounds.
I think, if I may, the language in here is basically some cleanup, but it also clarifies some potential problems that will be coming up. I think it's, in reading through this, it's well put together. I would urge the members to pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Rounds. Additional comments on that motion to approve? Hearing none, I will ask the Secretary to call the roll.
Aye.
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 Aye. Motion carried. Because of the nature of this agency bill, it certainly, I don't think we'll have an awful lot of discussion on the floor, but I'd be extremely comfortable in having a member of this committee carry and pitch this bill on the floor, and I would ask Representative Lederman to consider doing that.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would carry the bill.
Thank you. And Secretary Nelson will at this time or sometime after the meeting give you his spiel, which will meet to unanimous approval on the House floor, or not. Next, we will take up House Bill 1083, an act to authorize the South Dakota Commission on Gaming to assess costs of certain special meetings. I believe we have a distinguished proponent in the form of Representative Chuck Turberville. Good morning, Representative Turberville.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, members of the Commission. I am Chuck Turberville, member of the House of Representatives from Lawrence County. I have with me today for your consideration House Bill 1083, a bill to authorize the South Dakota Commission on Gaming to assess costs of certain special meetings. I approve of this bill. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I conclude my presentation. And I would ask that Mr. Larry Eliason come forward and further explain the bill. I appreciate your time and attention, and I will stand by for any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Turbeville, and we are extremely comforted that you are very seeking that approval of this bill. Additional proponents, House Bill 1083.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Larry Elias, and I'm the Executive Secretary of the South Dakota Commission on Gaming. The South Dakota Commission on Gaming is charged, of course, with the regulation of gaming in Deadwood, and by law, the commission meets quarterly. Sometimes situations will arise where some licensee or some applicant would like a special meeting. The case in point would be if a corporation was buying a casino in Deadwood and they wanted to close in late July so that they could be running that property during the motorcycle rally in August. The commission meets in June and meets again in September. It would take a special meeting of the commission to approve that license. And under what this bill would say is under those circumstances where a meeting has been called at the special request, a special meeting has been called by request of a particular individual or group, the costs of that meeting would be assessed to the parties that requested it. This is based on existing statute that allows the Division of Commercial Inspection and Licensing to assess the cost of making special inspections of scales and fuel pumps, again, made by request. This is entirely elective. This doesn't bind anybody, but if someone makes a special request and that request is granted, they would be assessed the actual costs of not less than $1,000. But I'd stand by for questions.
Thank you. Are there additional proponents, House Bill 1083? Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Roger Tellinghusen from Spearfish. Although I'm a registered lobbyist for a number of clients, I appear today on behalf of myself. I'm a practicing attorney in Spearfish, and as it's been my opportunity to represent a number of gaming interests in Deadwood, and this particular bill is really one that I think has come about as a result of practical experience on our part in Deadwood. And as Mr. Eliason said, there are oftentimes occasions where licensees have the need for specific matters to be brought to the attention of the commission. And because the commission only meets on a quarterly basis, the only way to address those matters, sometimes in a timely fashion, is to hold a special meeting. And the commission has been very generous and very good about agreeing to hold special meetings, but one of the concerns has always been, how do we pay for it? And although my clients routinely have asked me to offer that they would pay the costs that would be associated with holding the special meeting, there is no provision in the current law that would allow the commission to assess that cost back to the licensee who's requesting the special meeting, hence the reason for the bill. I would urge your approval, and I'll stand by for questions.
Thank you. Additional proponents, House Bill 1083.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Lauren Pancratz. I'm a registered lobbyist for the Deadwood Economic Development Corporation, and we also work with the gaming establishments. I think you've heard this is really a very straightforward bill. Mr. Eliason's testimony and Mr. Tellinghusen, you have two willing parties. They limit the expense, and it only applies to Deadwood, so no one else is impacted by it. And we would urge your approval of House Bill 1083.
Thank you. Additional proponents, House Bill 1083. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. My name is Michael Burt Demersman, and I represent the Deadwood Gaming Association. And I won't take any more of your time, but to say that I agree with the previous speakers, and I think if the people call for the meeting, it doesn't hurt to have to pay for it. Thank you.
Thank you. Additional proponents to House Bill 1083. Additional proponents. If not, are there opponents to House Bill 1083? Any opponents to House Bill 1083? Are there questions to this committee, to the proponents of this bill? Representative Rounds.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I would like to ask Mr. Lyson to come up, please. This bill is dealing directly with the South Dakota Commission on Gaming, and we do have a lot of new members up here in the panel today. If you could go into a little two-minute, one-minute dissertation as to the makeup of the Gaming Commission, where you meet, a little bit of background.
The commission is a five-member commission appointed by the governor for three-year terms with a two full-term limit. That was created in the original Deadwood Gaming statutes back in 1989. We meet quarterly. Usually we meet in Deadwood because that's where all of our licensees are, and if we have hearings, that's usually where all of the witnesses would be. We do have a small office in Pierre, myself, and two support staff. Our office, our main office, is in Deadwood because that's where the bulk of the activity is. As I said, primarily it's responsible for regulating the casinos. Obviously, everybody who works there in a gaming capacity is licensed. In 1992, the duties of the Racing Commission was abolished, and those duties were transferred. So we also function as a state racing commission. But the tracks at Fort Pierre and Aberdeen in April and May.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lyson. And Representative Browns, that was a great question. Representative Rausch.
I would have a question probably for Mr. Lyson also. I was just curious, as I'm not objecting to having this bill at all. I'm just curious why a charge of $1,000, is that?
But this summer, the chairman asked me, as Mr. Tellinghusen said, cost has always been a concern when we get these requests. We want to be responsive to the industry, but we also want to be frugal. And I did a quick calculation for just a half-hour telephone conference call, and I got expenses of $788. About half of that, you've got five commissioners that, by statute, $75 per diem. Then there's the attorney's fees and preparing the meeting notices, mailing the meeting notices, and frankly, the staff time of getting five commissioners and then usually the commission's attorney plus Mr. Tellinghusen or whoever may be representing the requester. You've got seven people whose calendars to schedule, and sometimes it's kind of like getting seven barn cats into a cardboard box at the same time. It takes some time to coordinate that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just curious if maybe that's actually too low of a number, and you know, if they want the special meeting, maybe it should be more substantial, that it's worth all the time and effort of changing everybody's schedule for a meeting. I'm just throwing that out.
Our intention was to assess the costs or come close to it, but also a reason for putting the $1,000 in there is to put people on notice that we're not just going to charge you the $20 for the telephone call. It's going to be all of the expenses.
Thank you. Additional questions?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes. Representative Kurd.
A question for you too, sir. Thank you. Mr. Chairman, once the cost is assessed, I don't see anything in the language here about the way to remedy it should someone fail to pay such cost. Do you believe that's a necessary component of the bill, or do you have appropriate mechanisms in place to make sure that the costs are recouped?
Almost anybody that would request a meeting would be a licensee, and if they failed to pay a bill due to the commission, I think that there would be serious consequences at the next meeting.
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, Representative Beckman.
Question two for Mr. Lyson. Why couldn't it not be actual cost of the special meeting?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure I understand the question.
Representative Fleischer, could you restate the question?
Well, maybe I'm not understanding the $1,000 or whichever is greater. You're basically going to assess to the whoever calls the meeting. Why couldn't it be the actual cost of what those expenses are? Am I missing something?
Well, I think that they would probably come close to $1,000 minimum, and we felt it was important to to put that fee in there so that people who were requesting would understand that it could be a substantial cost?
Well, to me, actual cost, whatever that would be, whether it'd be $500 or $2,000, they would pay it.
Yes, if it was assessed at actual cost, yeah.
Oh, just a question, just a thought.
I guess there's additional proponents that would like to more accurately clarify that question for Representative Feichert. I think that we did kind of cover it, but...
Mr. Chairman, thank you, Roger, telling his representative. I would just point out to you that on line 9, if you look at the underscored portion of the existing or the proposed bill, the special meeting is called pursuant to the request of any person. The actual costs of the meeting, including personnel costs, I think somebody asked that question, are included in that calculation. If the actual costs actually are less than $1,000, the person requesting the meeting would nonetheless pay $1,000. On the other hand, if the actual cost exceeded $1,000, they would pay whatever that amount is. Okay. Thank you.
Additional questions? Yeah. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In the event, Mr. Eliason, in the event the cost is less than $1,000, $1,000 is collected, where does the remaining money go and for what purposes?
The all of the revenue that the commission receives is distributed in a formula that's set out in the racing, or excuse me, in the gaming section. But generally, that money is distributed 70% to the state general fund, 10% to the school districts in Lawrence County, and then that's offset if they get state aid, 10% to the other cities in Lawrence County and 10% to Deadwood. And that formula is spelled out in the statute where the gaming revenues go.
Additional questions? How about I ask this question? Any committee discussion and or action on House Bill 1083. Representative Browns?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move due pass on House Bill 1083.
Thank you. And we do have a second from Representative Browns.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As you read the bill and as we hear the testimony, the costs that are incurred with these meetings generally gets close to, as he talked about, a teleconference, you know, at $700 and some dollars. In my background and my history, when you have meetings, special meetings set up, generally you run over. It's hard to show all of the actual costs involved when you're considering all the members, the time spent, the personnel, the telephone calls, the communication. I don't think $1,000 minimum is out of line, and I do believe that those that are requesting the meeting will understand that, and that'll be a decision that if they want to request a meeting, they'll have to make. As we heard in the testimony, those that want to call the special meeting, those businesses out there, or license holders, they will know that coming in. I don't think it's going to bother them one bit to know that it's going to be $1,000 minimum or higher. So I think this is moving in the right direction. It's laid out in statute where the extra money goes if the actual costs are under $1,000. I would ask and urge the membership to support the bill, and let's move it to the floor.
Thank you, Representative Browns. Representative Boland, do you have any follow-up on your second? Well, supportive comments of this motion do pass. Now that I will ask the secretary to call the roll on the roll. House Bill 1083 motion do pass.
Mr. Chair.
Motion carried.
Move to consent.
Representative Romka moves consent. Is there a second?
Second.
Representative Olson.
Chair, I would disagree with consent on this one.
Representative Rounds has got just a little bit of a technical difficulty on this, so this will move to the House floor. Motion to pass. Representative Romka, that was a very admirable try, and had it not be so early in the session, I think that you would have certainly received that. We had the opportunity to go through two quick bills. I just want to remind this committee that we will have the opportunity, many members up here, if you are sponsoring a bill that appears before here, when it comes time to offer that proponent testimony, I would ask that you politely or quietly walk around and offer your proponent testimony from the chair out there. Any other additional items to come before this committee today? Oh, yes, and we will start that. Any proponent, opponent testimony, please sign in so we can have those names documented. Reminder to this committee and to everybody that this room will be cleared in a matter of seconds so that we can participate in a very honorable and historic event. It does not happen very often, but we will have the inauguration of our soon-to-be president. Extremely significant and historical event in the United States of America. There be no further business, I would entertain a motion to adjourn. Motion and a second. Secretary reminded me that it appears that our agenda might in fact be lean and mean on Thursday with no bills. If there is something presented today, we will certainly docket that and go back to work on Thursday, but I will keep you posted. All those in favor of that motion to adjourn, signify by saying aye.
Aye.